Are you a member to the Plaid Chat Overwatch channel? You better be, because if you were, you could have submitted some questions. I don't know. I mixed up all of my tenses there. But basically, this is our episode where we're going to go through some of the hot takes, some of the questions that our members have submitted. If you're interested in supporting the channel, you can become a member, and we'll do stuff like this with you. We had a small period where we did this last month, but this is a full dedicated episode where all we're going to do is look through some of the questions that we put out. We made a community post. If you're a member and you didn't catch it, you can wait for the next month's episode. We put out a community post where we asked for your hot takes or your questions that you wanted us to answer, and we've pulled the best ones that we found. We're aiming for this episode to be around 45 minutes, so we might not be able to get to all of them, but any questions that we thought were good but we can't get to, we'll kick them onto a later episode. Are you guys ready for me to throw these at you? These people have not seen any of these questions, by the way. It's only me and Kurt that have seen them.
I'm not ready.
No?
Ready. I don't think I've asked this either.
So. I was born ready. Do you see how gray I am? I have no emotions because I'm ready. How gray I am.
All right, Kurt, fire the first question. It's from Glocksinner. Here we go. This is a good one for Avast. What would you say happened to the mayhem this year in terms of what went wrong during the middle of the season?
Yeah, what do you think about this, Avast?
They went to the main melee, Avast. How did they end up doing so poorly?
I think that it was a failure of... I pretty much think their roster was fine. It's just they had extremely weak mentals and poor communication. I think more than likely what ended up happening is that this team boomed and could never stop the boom. This team Pompeyed out of control, and they were not able to put the plug back on it. It was over.
What do you think, Matt? Jonathan? What happened to the mayhem?
I mean, I think they... I think this was like a... You know, they obviously, I think, had a tough schedule. When you looked at like strength of schedule, I believe, but this is a team that even with a tough schedule, the roster should have been able to overcome that. Like they have that many good players. I think it's a little bit of like once things started to get a little bit tough, instead of, you know, coming together as a team and putting together some wins, they just crumbled. They just fell apart and they can never get out of the spiral.
Yeah, I mean, I think as well, you know, it could just been a case of the COVID stuff as well. You know, like these players are away from home. They're all living in Florida and, you know, they're probably being taken care of, knowing the Florida Mayhem management, the staff, the people behind it. They're probably being taken care of in a really good way. But still, you know, it's COVID season. They're in America. You know, maybe that was part of the reason why this team got a little bit boomed. You know, obviously,
a little bit boomed.
Being in checkmate was not something you wanted to do. They had a streak there where they lost to Houston, Dallas, and Washington.
Yes, they had a really acceptable streak for a while.
Yeah, that happens. And then you like try to get ready for the summer showdown. Maybe one of the players is like, you know, struggling, or, you know, communication breaks down. You know, I think also losing faith. I think there was a big leadership.
I think that was huge for them.
I think it was a huge detriment to the team. People talked about going into the season. I think that sort of narrative came into fruition, and I think the team just struggled through that.
I would also say they didn't even look that great during the main melee. They did manage to make it through, but that was before a lot of the other teams had really come online. And as soon as those other teams came online, they were getting pushed down anyway.
Yeah, I could understand them, like, you know, struggling and having some rough games, but going from the main melee to almost contending to the fucking bread bowl for the end of the year, you know, I mean, come on, there's got to be some middle ground. You think like Yaki, Gargoyle, and Gangnam Jin as a baseline should be good enough to win some games, right?
That's why it was so surprising, for sure. Yeah. I mean, that's why people are confused about it. I'm sure it is. All right, Glocksinner, thank you for your question. Moving on to the next one. What have we got here, Kurt? What's the next question? Oh, here we go. Xavier's with a spicy one. Is the downfall of the Shock this season due to there not being a hard hit scan, Widowash, or Zen meta? I want to preempt this one by saying the downfall of the Shock has been exaggerated. They still finished like third, didn't they? Or second? What even was it?
They finished top three in NA, right?
It was top two, wasn't it? Wasn't Atlanta in third?
No, the Gladiators passed them as well by winning the end.
Yeah, sorry, of course. Shock ended up in fourth. Yeah. They're in play-ins. What are we talking about? Yeah. Yes, of course. Shock are in fourth, but still, incredible regular season record. Talk to me, though, a little bit. If we don't want to use, like, extreme terms like the downfall of the Shock, why are Shock not looking like title contenders? Is it because of this meta thing that they can't lean into Widow Ash with Anse and Violet on Zen?
No.
I think that they brought in a lot of new pieces to this team. Nero, FD God. I think it was part of a team chemistry. Not team chemistry. Like, I think they get on well with each other. But, you know, being on the same page, having the same mentality, the same ideas in game, you know, it's hard to get on the same page sometimes. And I think the Shock early on, especially, they were just one of those teams that try to figure stuff out and get their players on the same page. It's, you know, it's a team sport. That happens. And I think, you know, trying to onboard some of these new players, it just took longer than people thought it would.
I 12-4.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, downfall, 12-4. I don't think it's been a downfall. I think they just have not, you know, over the years, you could probably look back at certain games that were close for them in certain moments, and they always made the right play. They always came through. And I think sometimes as a team, you can kind of, with that confidence of always coming through, be confident you're going to make the play. The hardest part is when you don't start making those plays and you get in the cycle of, we're not going to pull through at this moment. It's very difficult to pull out of that. Cool. And I think that's kind of what they've ended up in with this season, where I think that pressure of not coming up in those big moments has just been all on the shoulders, you know, not, it shouldn't be, but it probably does feel like it's all on the shoulder of some of those new players.
Yeah.
Where, hey, this team was pulling through before and now they're not. Oh, it's this new, like, additions and whatnot, when it's just a team issue, I think.
I want to point to two more things as well that I think are also factors. One, the Zen meta argument, I think, is true to the degree that they struggle to find a good role for Violet this year. Putting him on Hitscan and playing him on Echo and stuff like that is nonsense in some of their early matches. And then having him play, like, the Mercy and the Lucio, again, nonsense. And they should have just been trying to run him on BAP and these kind of roles where he can have huge impact. The Brig, also, even though he's good at it, it's not the highest impact role for him really carrying and put out this insane performance. And he is like an MVP candidate at times when you can get him on his best stuff. The second part, though, is brain drain. I seriously think that some of losing the Shock's coaching staff, losing 9K, losing Junk Buck, has put added pressure on Krusty to try and manage all the pieces. Those decisions to try and do wacky stuff didn't pay off as much as they had done in prior seasons. It looked like such an excellent team. Let's go on. What is number three question? Okay, Jose Antonio Lopez. Was this year OG's last opportunity to find success at the pro level? All Korean team, all Korean coaching staff, with an ex-main tank as the head coach, and he still couldn't put it together. Is there any hope left? I want someone to take the for argument and someone against. Who's going to sell me on the OG copium? Who's going to sell it? There's got to be a peddler out there somewhere.
I'll sell it.
Thank you, little misfit simp.
I've done some interviews with OG and such. I mean, like, I think my four cell here is that they're just, my four cell is essentially like it's hidden away underneath the layers and layers. There is a star level player hidden in there, but there's a lot of layers. A lot of layers to peel away still, and that's kind of that. Honestly, that's my only four argument. Realistically, is that there is potential within there. It's just hidden beneath layers.
Yeah, I if you want to make the four argument as well, I'd add that I think that we know that OG can be good. I think at this point he's just like a bit of a volatile asset. Like, if you're a general manager trying to put together a team, you can take a bet on OG because you know that he's good at the game, but he has his ups and downs. I think he's a bit volatile, but, you know, he'd be an upgrade to some of the lower end teams like Vancouver Titans. You know, if they replace Changsik with OG, I think most Titans fans would be pretty excited about that and stuff like that.
I want to ask Matt specifically about that. If you're OG, do you want to play for a low level team? If you're a low level team, do you want to pick up OG instead of a rookie? What do you think the realistic?
Do you
want to
play competitive Overwatch? That's the question for OG.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just he has, like, I think, like, a vast set. He has the skill to be a star level player. Like, I think that is something we all could agree on. I think you could have pointed to the Dallas scenario and said this is just not the right scenario for him. That Mayhem seemed to have everything in place, right? To have success happen. And it just didn't come through. Where I think maybe there's a scenario where if you're OG, do you want to play for a Titans? No. If you're the Titans, do you want to bring in OG? I don't think so either, to be honest. Like, but if you're OG, do you want to go to play in a role for, like, maybe, you know, let's say in a world like Seoul Dynasty, let's say they didn't have two main tanks, right? Do you want to go and be a Winston specialist for a team, right? And maybe not play all of the time, but play the heroes you're the best at and not have the burden of being in all the time? Possibly. I think it's really just kind of dependent on, like, what he wants to do at this point. Like, I think there's going to be teams that would take a chance on him, right? Like, it's just whether he wants to do it or not.
Okay. Well, there you go. What's the next question, Kurt? Throw it at me. Tristan Nguyen says, if the Outlaws dominated this season, here's the hot take. This one's not a question, it's a hot take. If the Outlaws had dominated this season, Jake would be the MVP for filling where needed, for his contributions to coaching, and for his in-game leadership.
If the Titans would have won this season and Linkser would have dominated, he would have been the MVP as well. I mean, this is ridiculous. Is this Jake on a burner?
I find it weird. Why are we? I don't understand. I just don't understand why Jake is the assumed MVP in the situation that Outlaws dominate. What about all the other five players on the Outlaws that have been playing? Right.
Well, like, let me advocate. Let me play devil's advocate a moment, just in favor of Tristan here. I think the argument would be that given the Outlaws' success, they had a much higher win rate when Jake was in, and he's contributing like a role-filling kind of thing whilst also doing some coaching and like in-game leading for them too. So the combination of the assets there would push him over the top of a Happy or a Dante, or a Piggy or something
We vote for Coach of the Year right now. And, you know,
Jake was on that list. He was Rush the only coach playing.
Rush could be playing Words with Friends during the day for all I know. I mean, I have no clue. Who knows how much coaching Jake is doing? I mean, he's been playing a ton now, so who knows how much he's actually.
I mean, he's coaching himself. He's coaching every day. He's got to coach himself.
True.
Coaching every single day.
Always I think true. He's played great this year. I don't think even if they would have won every game, he would be the MVP.
Well, let me put it to you like this. They did kind of dominate the first half of the season. They went 7-1. All right, they didn't go to Hawaii both times, but in terms of regular season, Do you think this would have been valid if they'd done the same thing? They go 7-1 in the second half of the season. They finish 14-2. It's basically just a replica of the first season, the first half of the season to the second in terms of their players performing. Who would the MVP of the team have been if they just did double the first half of the season?
It would not have been Jake. It would have been like Piggy or Jongu or something, you know?
Okay.
I mean, you could even made the art, like, because like if you think about it, because also if you take the replica, that's when some of Houston's most successful stages when Juby was playing Lucio too.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So like Juby would have played more too. There would have been more Juby coming in and splitting that time. So, I mean,
That's a loaded comment. I respect this though.
I mean, of course it's loaded. It's a hot take. That's the point of it. It's a hot take though.
I mean, I will say that like theoretically, if Jake had played like the whole year all the time, like all the roles, like all the support roles, and it had been like pretty decent, all of them, I feel like this actually would be like a more reasonable.
You could make some
take.
Kind of.
You could make
that's
you could
so
make an
hypothetical.
Argument, right? But like, yeah, exactly. It's all hypothetical. But so is right. This. I mean, this is hypothetical too, because we don't know what the MVP, what the Outlaws' domination of the season would look like. Because like, there's no guarantee Jake would have looked the MVP for that either, right?
So. All right, let's move on to the next question then, or hot take, whatever we've got coming up. This I think is like number four, number five. Oh, here we go, Mr. Yeet here with a question for us all. Assuming the 5v5 changes are coming, you're an Owl GM. You're going into the 2022 season, and you can pick one player to draft onto your team, but only one. Who would it be and why? And that is to say, what kind of player do you think becomes the most valuable in the new format, where it's 5v5, you don't quite know everything about Overwatch 2, etc., etc.? Who are you picking, Matt? You know, you already have a player. Who?
I already know who I would take.
Who?
with the first pick in the 5v5 owl draft where I can only select one player. My pick is Hevster.
Okay. Why?
Okay. He is a DPS who can play everything. You can play him on like Pharah, you can play him on Hitscan, and the assumption is that with 5v5 and less barriers and more emphasis on gunplay and, you know, actually attacking another player as opposed to multiple barriers, DPS players, and specifically DPS players who can do multiple different things, become more impactful. Where, you know, I think a player like Prophet or Kevster, right? I mean, Kevster can play Widow, he can play Soldier, he can play Tracer, he can play Genji, he can play, I mean, the guy just plays everything at a high level that I think there's...
Take Kevster over Pelican. Couldn't you make the argument?
So he was my other one. Pelican was my other one. Have we seen Pelican play like any Widow or anything along those lines? Like,
no. He's gonna play Tracer and Projectile mostly.
So I mean,
seen a lot of hit scan.
I was actually considering like Kevster, Prophet, or Pelican.
Well, Prophet
would
be my pick.
Something very silly for shits and giggles.
Go on then. Yep.
No, you wrap up the conversation first.
Okay, my pick would be Prophet here because I feel like Kevster and Pelican, yeah, they've been fantastic this season. But what Prophet has that they don't is Prophet has proven it over every season, every meta. Every time he's been required to play whatever, he's been a great player up at the top. And he's managed to push his team to grand finals. He's managed to push his team to a championship. And he's been playing since 2017 at the absolute pinnacle of the game. So no matter how much the game shifts, he maintains a top position up there. And I feel like even though Tank should be your number one pick because it's the most important, who the fuck knows what's going on with tanks? So I think Prophet would be my pick.
I think that DPS are going to still be the first picks because I think with... less defensive mechanics, like, you know, less defense matrices, less shields, etc. DPS players are going to have even more impact on the outcome of a game. So I do think that DPS are the most important. So I think that Kevster is actually like a really good pick. You know, this is a young guy, super talented, very well-rounded. You know, probably going to play the game for a long time. Here's my shits and giggles pick before we move on. With the second pick of the 2021 5v5 draft, you can only select one player. Jonathan Larson selects Super.
Oh, wait,
here's
tell me
a guy.
Why. Tell me why.
Here's a guy who can play main tank, all main tanks at an elite level, and has the mechanical chops to play any off tank. He can even play DPS for you. He's one of the most well-rounded players in the league.
Okay,
I am
speaking the truth.
You kind of
ask
are.
If you had to pick a tank,
it was
going to
be
going
super.
In. Who would you pick?
And dude, the weird thing
I wouldn't pick Fate. I would not pick Fearless.
I thought people would have almost always gone with an off-tank player. Somebody who could play
No, because you want someone that can play main tank, though. Because you want to... I think Winston's going to be super valuable.
Yeah, I think it's impossible to tell this far out.
Nobody
I think
knows.
That is insane.
No one knows, right? But you want to have a tank player. That was going to be my legit answer. It was going to be super. Because I legitimately think that you need to have... Like, think about this, because DPS players may be the most impactful potentially because of the lack of shields and matrix. But also think about the unicorn aspect of, like, you're going to have a tank player still, and you need a tank player that's going to be able to play every tank in a map,
yeah,
potentially.
Sure.
And, like, that's a unicorn role. It's hard to find players that are going to be able to play not only just every main tank, but every off tank.
Super
too.
Can play the hog.
Super can do all of it. He can do all of it. The only person I can think of that comes close to that is, like, I think Gesture can a bit because he's got like Winston or Roadhog under his belt. Like, Fate sort of can. Like, Fearless, maybe,
what
but not really.
What off tank do you think could pull it off?
Like, what could play the main tanks as well?
Could Space pull it off? Could Void?
The thing is, I don't know enough about the best off tanks in terms of like watching their stream and watching them play off role. So I don't know even how to answer that question.
Gator is another good shout, maybe.
Gator's a good shout, but I think he's kind of limited still in his main tank pool, right?
I would not pick a tank. I feel like there's so much volatility. I would want to wait and see who's good at tank and then get them. Right.
Yeah,
or
I think
even
DPS
like,
will have most impact.
Well, but I feel like I'm just saying you want to have, but if you're going to have to pick, you want to start with a unicorn role player because
what about
like
Choyobin is very multi-talented.
Yeah, Yeah, but I'd still take Super because I feel like his main tank is Super. Better.
All right,
Super,
okay.
Good job.
Yeah.
I mean, crazy question, but I like it. Let's move on.
We should do like a hypothetical 5v5 draft. Like,
where I would love that. Pick, I actually would love that. That's a great off-season episode right there.
Yeah. Everybody would craft such a different team. It would just be like...
Especially if we do it in the offseason when more details are released about Overwatch 2, so we understand vaguely how the balance might work.
We pretty much know it's 5v5, and that's about it.
Yeah, that's pretty much
we're due for an episode. Due for an Overwatch 2 episode.
We are. We certainly are. Okay. Here's the next one. This is a hot take that I just wanted to roast. I'm going to be honest. I just wanted to pull this one up to roast it. Duran said, the joke was clearly that it should be pronounced meme P because it sounds like EMP, not fucking memp. Now, here's where I want to roast this. It was a mistype. Dante didn't deliberately type memp. He meant to type nice EMP and he accidentally hit the M at the beginning. That's why he corrected it afterwards. The memp is funny because it was a typo. The memp isn't funny because it was supposed to be meme MP. And also meme MP is much more difficult to say. Memp is funnier. Memp is a stupid word.
Memp is stupid. That's what's memp funny about good. It.
Memp is good.
This guy really thought Dante's over here fucking the Stephen Hawking of Overwatch fucking typing out like, this will be really funny. Like he's in the middle of the fight. Like the meme P. Like you think Dante is fucking the dude playing 5D chess in his head figuring out the word? Like no. Like come on. Like what are you doing over here?
All right.
This is off the fucking goop.
Little roast session over onto the next one. Don't know what the next one even is, but just absolutely obliterated that guy and then left him. He's a regular in my chat as well, so hopefully you can tell.
Oh, okay.
Not just a random
welcome
member.
The member. Welcome
the member.
Thank you for supporting the channel. We will brutalize your hot takes. All right. What is the next one, Curtis? What do you got for us? Okay. Nick Jump. Which player has exceeded expectations for you in this year more than any other player? So this would be like your overperformer of the year award, something like that. Anyone got one that jumps to mind immediately?
I would say Hawk. I think Hawk really established himself as like a top tier off tank player. Like he's in the conversation for like top 3, top 4 off tank player in the league now. And I think a lot of people had given up on Gator and Hawk as a tank duo going into this season, but in the league for a couple of years, not really achieved the results. We did that Atlanta Reign video on this channel. Said I was one of those people in the Atlanta Reign support group where I was like, I think these
he
guys...
He only mentions this stuff when he's right. Right.
Yes.
All other, 19 videos.
This is why you're tired of it because
you're
right all the time, Matt. So sorry about that.
Matt's just salty because he doesn't have that many right moments.
I don't write down every time I'm right because I'd run out of ink. I'd have too many things written down.
Run out of ink.
I think Hawk. I didn't think he'd be this good. But like early on, early on, it wasn't like the best thing in the world. But he definitely exceeded my expectations. And he's the first one that comes to mind, I think.
Okay. Other candidates?
I got skewed. Yeah. I had literally zero expectations for Skewed. Yeah. Didn't know who the fuck this guy was. Shows up playing Brigitte and shit. I'm like, what's going on here? And then he's fucking incredible the whole year. Skewed, like, easily.
Yeah.
I'm going to throw an odd one at you.
Yeah.
All right.
Fate. I didn't really think I wasn't expecting much from him going from Florida to Shanghai in the sense that I didn't think like he could kind of hit that elite level main tank slot again. I thought it was gonna hurt Shanghai because they thought letting go of Fearless and Stand One was gonna hurt because how good they were, but Fate was sick this year. I think that's one that like maybe he's not as an unknown quantity as somebody like Skewed, right, and overperforming, but still I think a lot of people even coming into the season were a little bit worried or wasn't sure if Fate still kind of had that and he was sick.
Yeah, my nomination, I think I was thinking of Skewed. I'm gonna throw out Juby, because coming straight out of collegiate, it wasn't just that I didn't know who he was. I looked at his VODs and I thought, he looks pretty underwhelming. He only plays Lucio. He's going to be a detriment to the team rather than helpful. And oh, okay, he did end up getting benched for their coach at various times throughout the season, which isn't the greatest indication of confidence in the player. But he developed, he played Mercy, he played Brig. He still had his Lucio to be able to rely on. In the first half of the season especially, he did look like a quality player. So he far exceeded my expectations and made that backline actually pretty decent for Houston. So I think that would be my selection.
Final shout out to Piggy as well. Legitimately one of the best Sigmas in the league. I thought he'd be like, you know, some random, like, bottom six of tank coming up. So.
All right. What is the next question here, Kurt? What do we got for them? Okay. Aaron Johnston. All right. This one is quite a personal question. But anyone who wants to answer, what has been the most rewarding aspect of this season? For example, league format, professional growth, opportunities. And what's been the most challenging part of this season? For example, still casting and working from home, the Blizzard lawsuit, like other stuff as well that might have affected us. Matt?
I really like how the format's played out this year. I think the league's been really competitive outside of like three teams. And I've enjoyed getting to work on it like every day. Has it made my schedule for recording this show extremely difficult? And have I missed tons of episodes? Yes. But I have I've enjoyed working on the league on the back end and having some impact on like how things gone this year and then we'll go for the future. I mean, I think there's a lot of challenges this year. I just kind of like miss working with people in a building, like seeing people. Like I'm typically a homebody, but at this point I'm kind of over it. And
I love that. Sorry, it took you 2 years of being just locked in your apartment to start getting over it.
Yeah. And I think the shittiest part is that like it seemed like we were kind of getting to a point where we could all get together. And now we've kind of gone backwards. And I don't know. I always now like think about like, well, how do we ever get out of, you know, this, which is just shitty to think about.
Yeah.
So I think that's been probably the most challenging part for me this year is like, when can we go back to doing stuff? Because it seemed like we were. And then now obviously not, which is tough.
Yeah, I think most rewarding is just putting on a great product. Like, it's been so...
It's been fun this year.
Yeah, the show has been so much more fun. The format changes, even, like, the graphics, the music in the breaks, like, stuff like that. Like, it just has, like, a way more fun setting. And I've really felt very happy working on the show. It feels like Watchpoint has been really fun to work on this year, and I feel like it's some of the best product I've worked on as a talent, which I'm proud of. Challenging working from home, of course. It's not difficult. I mean, my job's not difficult. That's not the word I want to use. It's challenging, I guess, to just work from home all the time, not being able to see your coworkers, but also not being able to engage with fans, because while it's very much fun to put on the show, some of the most fun and rewarding experience for me has been meeting with fans, talk to fans at live events, and just, you know, rinse, repeat, wake up at, 7:30, be done with the show at 7:30, 12 hours later, and just do that like 4 days of a week. It can get very tiring because you don't have like the same, you know, like I miss being, you know, in person and stuff. So it's been 2 years of this now.
Yes.
I didn't get to go to the home stands last year.
It honestly, it hasn't even, what's wild is it's been 2 years, but there's like sometimes where somebody's like, oh yeah, you remember this was like a year ago? I was like, holy shit. Like it felt like it went by so fast, like 2 years. Like, I don't know.
My last live event was BlizzCon 2019, I think.
That's crazy. It really is.
Oh yeah, because you didn't go to any home stands.
I
didn't.
Yeah, because he was part of the desk. The most rewarding part for me is definitely the format, and that might, I mean, it's gonna sound really repetitive here, but for when you work on the show, that every year, I mean, especially in 2018, but this happened in 2019 and 2020 as well, stage three is like, get it fucking done with. It feels like it's just the same teams playing over and over, and it's like, can we just get rid of this portion and get towards the end of the season where it actually matters to get team playoffs? And this year had so much snap and pace to it, where the teams only played four games and then they were going into the finals, and it just had a lot of flow to it, so that even stage three, I was still engaged the entire time with what was going on, rather than it ever feeling like a drag. So that was absolutely the most rewarding part to me. And then the most difficult is just, again, you can't talk to people in the same way because you're not in the same building. So you feel stuck. I felt very stagnant this year in terms of the quality of the product that we were putting out because we weren't in the same room able to improve it and like get it better and better and better. There's always just limitations on what you're able to do because you're just working remotely. So I'm craving working in a proper studio again where we can, I can chat to producers and chat to observers.
At this point, I'll just take working in the same... I'll take just casting in the same location as Mitch, wherever that is. At this point, I just want to be like turning like he, like my wall is him, like he's like him, you know?
It's infuriating as well that Bren has the space in his garage, but the workflow doesn't work for whatever reason for us to cast together. So we've just been separated by one wall the entire season, which is very annoying. What about you, Avast?
I guess I should comment. I don't work for the league necessarily, but I work very league adjacent, sort for the most part. And I do think the format has been I think everyone agrees that this particular format is the best out of all the formats that we've had. I personally, when I hone in more, God, the breaks being shorter between maps and matches.
Yeah.
Holy fucking Christ. Thank the Lord. That one, I can't thank for Matt Morello.
It's noticeable.
For Bust,
yeah, it's
I
noticeable.
Can thank Matt Morello for that one because that is, the breaks being long was just when you sit there in your stream every game, when you're there, when you do like a 10-hour day, like every day for every match, like, and it's you yourself doing the stream, it's just like gets annoying. It just gets really fucking annoying to like when you're just in your break time, because I hate break so much. I just like don't want to be talking about break. I just want to be like eventually you just get tired of it. So I think that's been the best. I think also figuring out a solution where we can sort of do regional play even in COVID with Hawaii.
Yeah,
like,
that was crazy
part of the format. That's like really, really good.
Yeah.
Most challenging for me, it's definitely still been working from home, but not because of like working with people, it's just because of the way my direction, my job has moved. It's really hard. Sometimes when you deal with organizations, and this is for anyone that wants to work in esports, sometimes when you deal with organizations, it's like dealing with a goldfish. And so like you're dealing with a bunch of goldfish and they forget who you are after 10 seconds and then they circle around to the other side of the bowl. And so, and especially when you're in a role, when you're like a more creative role and you're helping shape like content plans and like make sure that your partnerships are being fulfilled, etc., with like content, your org sometimes can just be like, we haven't seen this guy in a while. Okay, moving on. We're just never going to talk to him again, you know? And that's like, and so like, and it's not because of people being bad at their jobs or stuff like that. It's just because of the way esports moves and like creative work moves in particular. And like, sort of like casting where you want to integrate and talk to people. So like being remote is really challenging for like the direction my career has moved to. So also I wanted to go to more events and hang out with more casting people. And then that all got.
Yep. Pooped.
Yeah. Pooped. And yeah, that sucks.
Okay, let's move on to the next question. This one's a spicy one. I liked this one, so I included it. I'm just going to throw it out to you. I'm not going to comment on it because that's my privilege as a host. Is Carpe overrated, says Andrew Curry. As good as a player as he is, it seems like the Fusion have been slowly cycling him out when they've had the resources to do so. Is he at risk of being the best loser in Overwatch League history? So that's a secondary question. First of all, I want to address, is Carpe overrated? Yeah. The floor is yours, gentlemen.
No. If Carpe was free, he would start on most teams, and most teams would be very happy to have him. I think, like, this year very well could have been one where the Fusion did contend in APAC. They just got... I mean, they had a very strong roster, right? It's just some shitty situations where they... Funny Astro couldn't get there, Poco couldn't get there... Shockwave, right? EQO. I mean, these are like big time players for them. It's not like they're just missing, you know, their extra support on the bench, right? I think at times Philly has probably asked him to do too much and probably relied on him too heavily in certain roles. Where I think some of the reasons you see them subbing him out and cycling him out is because you're trying to hone in on a role that he can actually focus on and be impactful on and master as opposed to asking him to do 1,000 different things, right? So I don't think he's overrated. I think that talk, even last year, was just silly.
I think he's properly rated. I think if you go back and you consider Carpe in 2018, 2019, I think we held him to a very different standard. I think we looked at him as like top two player in the league. Like it was him and Jonak for like 2018. Jonak won by a mile, like the MVP in 2018, right? Yeah. But Carpe was in that conversation back then.
Yeah, he was probably number two. He really was.
Yeah. I don't think majority of people around the league hold him to that standard anymore. We don't talk about him as much. We don't consider him as much for these accolades and awards. We didn't even mention him in our role star segment.
No.
And I think that's because he's properly rated at this point. I think that he's not as dominant as he once were. And I don't think we talk about him in that way anymore. And if you hold on to that belief that you think that Carpe is like that same level of hitscan player, I think that you're probably an outlier. I think the majority probably rates Carpe.
Avast, you, that's the problem.
What?
Avast says it's the community that's wrong.
It's you guys that are wrong.
Well, it wouldn't be the community if the majority is right, right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't exactly know what the current consensus exactly is on Carpe per se. Also, I'm fairly certain this is an Andrew Rush ZP burner account, because think about it. First name's Andrew. He's talked about Carpe being overrated. I think there's a ZP burner account right here. I'm witnessing.
I do think, though, that it's not even he's at risk of being the best loser in our history. I can't think of anyone who's a better player who has failed to achieve a title more consistently. Like, a long career, has never got a title. Half the teams in the league have got a title before Carpe. He's got to be in the running, if not the leading candidate for best loser.
I mean, he's literally gone to grand finals, you know, and hasn't won, you know. So
who else would be up there? Like Alarm, but he hasn't had the same tenure, right? Like Alarm's a better player, I think, at this point. That's very clear. Oh, but he hasn't had the same tenure of like always coming second and never quite making.
You're also, I think with Overwatch being such a team game, you're also beholden to how everybody else is on the roster as well, where, you know, you could put Carpe on, like, I feel like he's either, you know, maybe it's the Fusion kind of being all together like this year, or having a role kind of like, you know, Bird Ring with the Gladiators away from being in that conversation of like one of the better DPS players in the league again.
Okay, but you can't tell me that Carpe played his best in the 2018 finals, the whole 2019 season, or the 2020 finals when they went there as well.
No.
Like in the big moments, Carpe has been part of the reason, I believe, why the Fusion have not been able to actually win those things.
That's true.
Right? So I think that's another part to his story that I'm quite interested to tap into. Matt, this next question is for you, but you won't know how to answer it because I don't know how to answer it either. This question is repeatedly asked, so we wanted to address it from Prez. Will you consider bringing back head-to-head?
Yeah, I mean, we would. We've talked about it. Josh just refuses to record anything
That's
with me.
That's not true.
You know, one of the things that Josh is, he's just, you know, one of the laziest people we have on this channel. You know,
That's very true.
So busy doing only things that personally impact him in a positive way. No, I would love to bring back head-to-heads. I think we probably would want to include more people and not just have it rely on us two. You know, maybe that's a Vast. Maybe it's
I could do head-to-head.
Maybe it's somebody else. Yeah, I mean, you could
great microphone
do that.
Does it get worse when I get closer?
Oh my god,
so bad!
You,
it sounds like a walkie-talkie.
You sound like you're fucking. You sound like you're about to. You work in like a cafeteria, and you're about to announce that like pizza's being served and other things. The hot stations are getting refreshed.
So it's fine when I'm far away. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I would love to do head-to-heads. I would also love to do other stuff on the chat channel, whether it's like do some type of like game streams and stuff. You know, we've done casters to masters and we're climbing on the
we are
channel.
Not climbing, you're lying climbing. To yourself, we are down bad.
I think one of the problems with head-to-head as well is that we often just agree on the same stuff, so you know that the thing with head-to-head is you're supposed to have different opinions and then you argue the different opinions, But so often you find yourself in a position.
Well, that's why it was good with me and Josh. Advocate. You know, we're not afraid to be wrong, so we don't take all these same opinions.
When I did head to head with Josh last year, I was like, "Was the summer showdown a one-off for the Toronto Defiant?" And I was like, "Nope, this team's gonna be great." You know, they have a breakout performance here with agilities playing the Genji. Genji got nerfed. Not going to be a problem.
You can agree for different reasons.
The line there, arguing something I didn't believe in because we wanted to do a head-to-head episode. It just, most of the time we agree on stuff, and it's hard to, record.
All right. This would have been a good year for it because I feel like we disagreed on a lot of stuff this year.
Oh yeah, there'd be tons of content that we could do. It's just a matter of doing it. And I mean, they also got slightly lower viewership, so it's like, what do we want to expend our time doing? But we will consider definitely bringing that back. I believe we have three more questions. So the next question is about Violet, I believe. Here we go. Also, we included another member who responded to this question. So Scooby McDooby just took it upon himself to just respond to Casdega's question.
Like, I will not take this fucking slander.
So this is a joint. This is a question and a hot take response that we want to analyze here. So let me read it out. This is original question is from Casdega. Do you think Shock's strange coaching decisions around their backline has jeopardized Violet's legacy of the greatest flex support in history? This was something we expected to be cemented this year if they performed at their peak again. And Scloob Movement Doobie says, I think people overrate lethality among supports. He's the most lethal flex support, has the best aim of any flex support, but does that make him the best? I would say no. Alarm was better than him last year. Alarm, Shu, Iris, and Fielder all played better than him this year. Let's start with the hot take.
I don't think it's impacted. I don't think it's impacted his legacy at all.
You're saying Alarm was better than Violet last year?
Yep, that's what they said. Alarm was an MVP candidate. Alarm was very good.
Yeah, people have a different version of the standings than we do. The Shock were 12-4. It's not like this team was the Florida Mayhem.
You're talking about this year. Shut up, man. We're talking about the hot takes.
But it does take into account the fact that saying the jeopardized Violet's legacy, theoretically, you could argue that. But yeah, let's start with the Scloobie McDooby when he's been smoking his own McDooby over here, Mr. What, Matt?
I feel like lethality among supports is something that's extremely important now. Like, I feel like when Jonak in season one came basically another DPS, basically a stronger DPS than anybody on New York, kind of changed everything. And then what? You just saw that evolve with Violet and Alarm? Like, I feel like the supports being able to shoot is what pushed Avast out of the league and what propelled all these other players to the top.
First of all, that's not even close to being true, but that's fair.
I want to just for a moment get that part of the hot take that says Alarm was better than him last year. There was some argument to say that Alarm, you know, could have been better because he was an all-rounder. He played the Ana, he played the Brig to a level. Like, there was some level of an argument there, but when you actually got him on the Zen and the Bap, he was clearly, he was number one and Alarm was number two. There was no argument about that.
Yeah.
Violet was the best at those heroes and was outstandingly impactful last year for the Shock. I still think that he is the best flex support if you get him on those roles. I think Alarm might be a more well-rounded flex support, but I think Violet is. Now, in terms of the legacy, though, the legacy argument can still be affected even if you go 12-4 because they don't go to Hawaii. They don't look like they have championship aspirations. We were thinking this year that even if they don't three-peat, one of Violet or Choyobin, something like that, is probably going to be cemented as our GOAT player in Overwatch. You know, overtaking people like maybe Prophet, who has a bit of an argument, something like that. At the moment, I would say there is no GOAT in Overwatch. But if Shock had three-peated or made it deep in the playoffs, we were thinking it's a very strong chance that it's Violet or Choi. I think there is some argument to say that these weird coaching decisions have fucked with Violet this year. I'm not thinking about Violet as being anywhere near the best support player this year because he didn't even get a chance to play it a lot of the time.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of hard to argue against when you see Violet fucking rolling around on McCree and Mercy and shit and Lucio like that. Yeah, I mean, it's fucked with his legacy, but you're assuming that, like, you can I can just choose not to look at this year. You know, if he has like, if next year he comes back and he's like really good, I'll be like, okay, that was the fucking crusty crack pipe year. He was on the bender.
Yeah.
Like that was like, you know, like shit happens type of thing. They swapped on the roster. It's more so, does this continue forward? Right. And also, how do they finish the year? Right. I think if they finish the year strong with the Twilight Violet backline, and they keep Twilight in because it's clear that Twilight is like just the more overall, more rounded player for the current meta and for what they need as a team, then Violet's legacy will still be saved. It'll just be like they had a rough portion of the year, but like there's lots of rope that they have to like save themselves here and to save Violet's legacy. And so, but like it's really, you have to wait a while to see like what goes wrong.
I would also say the lethality amongst supports, you know, when we did the episode and we just talked about, like role stars and whatnot, we're like, do we even include main supports? Like, because Flux, like, you look at a player like Skewed, who played most of the season for the Gladiators, and I know he played a lot of Zen and Brig and other types of stuff. I think that line between, you know, in support and Flex support, just like, you know, hit scan and Flex DPS, is going to get blurred. You're gonna have players that are gonna come up, and you already see, you know, Violet fucking around with some Lucio, playing some Mercy. Like, you're going to have players who are going to start to play all of this stuff and really kind of just burn that kind of whole thing to the ground.
Also, what other measure is there than lethality among Flex supports in general? Because, like, yeah, you can look at, like, lamp usage, ult usage, cooldown usage, etc. But, like, let's say, for example, we look at Alarm and be like, oh, Alarm wasn't the most lethal, but he hit every sleep. Is that not, if he was shooting, is that not a measure of lethality in a way where he's hitting all of his shots, you know? He's just hitting the shots still, but with sleeps. Like, at the end of the day, like, when you look at how much impact a player has, like, on Flex support in particular, there's a lot of usage that skews towards your ult usage and your positioning, etc., right? But at the end of the day, the thing that's going to, you know, kind of put you above the rest is that if you're owning, and if you're, like, have insane mechanics for the most part, like, you're gonna be in the top. Like, that's why people even talked about Khan. I think Khan had dumb brain, but he had really good mechanics. He had really good mechanics.
But that's kind of his point, that people overrate it. You know, that
Violet wasn't stupid. When we watched Violet play, he never played dumb, right? So yeah, except, I mean, like, this year he kind of did. But
I think his playstyle would have been dumb if he couldn't hit the shots. You know, he really put himself in position to clutch a lot, but he did hit the shots, and so it was the right play.
I'll take Shu flanking with an Ant Matrix and killing three proper lamp usage any day.
Okay. Jonathan, any final thoughts before we move on to the next?
No, I don't really blame Violet for the coaching decisions. It, you know, obviously it may be like staggered at the year if he comes back strong next year, but I don't like look at it as like a bad thing. And also I think, you know, he was not as dominant as last year, but I don't think he's at fault necessarily for that as an individual player.
This next question, I only want Avast. Only Avast's opinion here. No comments from anyone else. All right? Bring it up, Kurt. Who is sexier, Sideshow or Mr. X?
I'm not even in the conversation.
No.
Johnny's not even here.
People forget you're on the show sometimes.
I think they chose the two...
At least I'm actually on the show, Matt.
The two. I think they chose the two best-looking people.
Yeah, they
chose
the two best-looking people.
I think there's like, well, first of all, you have to first classify, there's two different camps here that would be appealing to there was your, one could say your camp of, you're looking for the kind of an, the more, you know, mind the pun, sort of an egghead type of look here with Sideshow. You know, you want the dork.
An older man, an older looking man. Yeah.
Who fills out
a dating profile and they say, I'm looking for an egg-headed dork. That's never been
something corny about that. There are so many people, both men and women alike, that want like a dorky person, you know? Like 100%. Like,
they're looking for an egg-headed dad bod.
But it's not just that. It's not just that aspect. It's when you throw in the British aspect too. Throw in the Brit, right? Mm. Like American people, they'll go, even, I mean, not just American people, you know, they throw in like quirky British guy.
Plus that, 10 like, sexy points.
Yeah, you know, that works.
So what you're saying is I'm sexier than Matt.
No, I'm not saying that.
What you're saying is this specimen has just dripping in sex appeal.
I think if you take it on a base level, maybe Matt could theoretically be more attractive, but you have to take away points for this. And just the points you take away. I feel like
this is ages ago.
I feel like Matt has to be, to me, he kind of reminds me of a walrus. In that he, I feel
what?
Like, I feel like he expects everything to be done for him. You know, he just kind of lays there. Like, it might be housework. It might be showing up to the show. It might be like, it could be a variety of topics, but he's like the beach king, you know? And for that, like, who wants to be with the beach king? So when you think of the pure sexy appeal of that, like, Matt knows that he's dominant and he controls the beach, and that's not sexy. Sideshow, he's squirrely, you know? He's fighting for everything he's got out there. So I think this is revealing more
about you than it is about me or Matt.
I think Sideshow's sexier, though. I think Matt's too intimidating for your average person.
Oh, it's my God.
Just too intimidating a person.
Okay, wonderful. All right, moving on. This next question we're not going to actually tackle right now, but we wanted to bring it up just to make a comment about it, which is, Curtis, Alex Tequila said, what has Kurt learned about Overwatch or Owl by working on the show for all this time? Now, this, I think, would get spoiled in such a short system. I want this to be a full episode in the off-season.
This is an off-season episode.
This is a full episode where we just test Kurt on knowledge from Overwatch.
Kurt has been forced to listen to this crap for 100-something episodes. And I want to know if we actually are educating anybody. If somebody would be educated, it would be Kurt.
I want to know if Kurt has experienced any personal growth at all over doing this. Has he learned anything ever at all? No. Is he just like, yeah. You know, has he learned any new facts about anything?
Yes, he probably has.
About just anything.
Yeah.
We have to dig deep for that one.
Yeah, so this is a full off-season episode. So we love the idea, Alex. We're definitely stealing it for some off-season content. Was that it, or was there one more question?
No, that's it. But on that note, a lot of the questions that we didn't answer, we will also be stealing for off-season content. So I appreciate all the member comments.
Yeah. We really do appreciate people leaving hot takes, questions, stuff like that. Some of them we already had. Like, we already planned to do this idea. But the fact that you're also asking about it means that, yeah, I mean, it's what we want to do and it's what you want to see as well. So
Kurt, we've got some reveal, Pog.
Yeah. We've got some big ideas for cool off-season content that should still keep things fresh when they're happening. Thank you all for submitting questions and hot takes. We snuck in somewhere around the 45-minute mark. Not too bad. Not too shabby.
Yes. Thank you for being paying members of this channel.
Thank you.
We do appreciate the financial support as well. Thank you, members. Thank you, member.
Kurt ate good this month.
Yes, he did.
Did not learn anything, though.
Avast had to go to jail, but Kurt's eating good.
I lost all color. I went back to grayscale only. I've lost it all.
Avast went back in time, and he can only eat crackers. Very looking background there. Are you in an? Are you actually in an apartment, or is this some kind of?
This is not my apartment. I'm in the office. Okay.
Misfits likes to make sure that their employees hate their lives. just beat them down into submission until they can't think about doing anything else than work.
Strobing
for a second,
nature.
I thought maybe he like ratted somebody out in Dallas and he's in like witness protection or something like that. No. He's got show us your ankles. You got an ankle bracelet on? Are you out of that room or what?
I mean, I have a key card.
Okay. Don't show us that.
I mean, there's nothing on there. There's nothing on the key card. It's just blank, you know? I mean, luckily you missed the day when they do the psychological torture day where they strobe the lights and put foghorns over the intercoms. You missed that.
Yeah. All right. Well, we will see you for episode 103. It'll be coming up at the regular time on Tuesday at like 10 a.m. Is that when we normally post? Something like that. You can catch a regular episode. We should have another one about Overwatch 2 coming up at some point as well. Hopefully there'll be some kind of announcement coming up about Overwatch 2. It's been like 100 days since the last announcement, so we're kind of waiting on that, honestly, because otherwise we're rehashing the same kind of stuff.
Please.
But we should have an episode for you. We'll see you next time. Goodbye.